This is Michael J. Fox. Thanks for listening to this podcast. Learn more about the Michael J. Fox Foundation's work and how you can help speed a cure at michaeljfox.org.
Welcome to a recap of our latest Third Thursday webinar. Hear directly from expert panelists as they discuss Parkinson's research and answer your questions about living with the disease. Join us live next time by registering for an upcoming webinar at michaeljfox.org.
Hi, everyone, and thank you so much for joining us. I'm Dr. Rachel Dolan, Vice President of Medical Communications at the Michael J. Fox Foundation, and I'll be your moderator for today's webinar. Today, we're discussing ways to manage stress, anxiety, and uncertainty, feelings all of us are experiencing to at least some extent during this time. We're so glad to be able to come together to share our experiences, offer tips we hope will be helpful, and to answer your questions. Being with others and having a sense of community, as we'll talk about, is so important during this time. So even though you can't see us or the other listeners, I want you to know that there are almost 6,000 people who registered for this webinar. That's 6,000 people with Parkinson's, their loved ones, care partners, care providers, and researchers who are all here together. And behind the scenes, there are five Michael J. Fox Foundation staff members working from their homes who will be answering your questions throughout the hour. We've got a lot to discuss, so let's get started. A brief overview of our agenda. We'll talk about stress, how to be mindful, ways to manage anxiety and feelings of loneliness, and finding balance during this time. So let me introduce our panelists. Lori Mishley is a naturopathic physician and Parkinson's disease researcher. Hi, Lori, and thank you for being here.
Hi, thanks for inviting me.
Natalie Kogan is the founder of Happier and author of Happier Now. Welcome, Natalie.
I'm really grateful to be joining all of you. Thank you.
And last but not least, we have Dan Cannell, who has been living with Parkinson's since 2013. We're so glad to have you with us, Dan.
I'm honored to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
So let's dive in, because as you saw, we've got a lot to talk about and a lot of what I hope will be helpful discussion. So stress and Parkinson's, Lori, we're all feeling a lot of stress right now, but people with Parkinson's may feel stress in different ways. And as you see on the bottom of the slide there, a Fox Insight survey showed that people with Parkinson's reported more stress and increased symptoms compared to people with Parkinson's. So, Lori, can you tell us a little bit about stress and how it can affect people with Parkinson's?
Yeah, I think many people with Parkinson's will tell you that their initial symptoms came on during a period of stress, and almost every patient will tell you that their symptoms are worse during periods of stress. We even have rat research that says stress makes motor symptoms worse. But not all stress is bad. You know, I think it's really important to say that stress is just how the body adapts to changes and adjustments in their life. There's good stress and bad stress. Planning a wedding, traveling is stressful, but it's good stress. It's called eustress. There's also distress, which I think a lot of people are kind of trying to navigate right now. There's also physical stress, like, you know, going through a surgery, taking a fall, and emotional stress, which you sometimes feel with, you know, more rapid heartbeat, you start breathing through the upper part of your chest, your hands and feet get cold, it's hard to focus. So this becomes a really complex issue, and each person sort of manifests their stress and handles it differently.
I think that's such a good overview and so important to remember, I think. We see on the screen there exercise. We get so many questions about, you know, my tremor gets worse when I exercise. You know, that's a great example about a good stress, exercise, bringing out symptoms. But as, again, we're all experiencing this heightened stress and that bringing out more symptoms. So, Dan, can you tell us a little bit about your stress and how that has manifested itself in your Parkinson's, maybe even before and during this period of COVID?
Sure. Well, I think, you know, having PD and being diagnosed with PD is stressful in and of itself. And then layering on top of that, the whole COVID atmosphere and the turbulent times and the uncertainty of the world around us, in addition to the uncertainty of sort of the world within us in the Parkinson's side of things, is for me at least, been sometimes synergistic. It's created more stress. And on top of that, the sort of the change in our lack of schedules, because things are just all different today than they were a month and a half ago, has meant things worked down. As a concrete example, medication schedules. My medication schedule is not as rock solid as it had been, and it's taken me several weeks to get it back to where it should be, because I wasn't getting up at the same time, I was going to bed at the same time, and it was harder to manage. So the stresses of living day to day has translated into sort of real world practical problems or issues that most people who don't have PD don't have to worry about.
I think that's so important to highlight, and you see the bottom bullet there, that stress itself can make your medication feel like it's not working as well, but not taking your medication on time or on a regular schedule or getting out of the routine of things can be a stressor in and of itself. So it's really important right now to make sure that you're staying on top of things and being more in a routine and more in a schedule.
I was saying the bottom bullet, that medications can seem less effective. I notice that, for me at least, sometimes when I'm stressed out, it almost feels like I skip a dose. The impact is much greater than when I'm not stressed out. So being aware and cognizant of that and how you plan your day is important.
Definitely.
This is Lori. Can I just add too that I think a lot of patients, that causes more stress when their meds don't work, and when during periods of stress, I find a lot of people fearing that their disease is progressing because the meds that used to work aren't working so well right now. And I think just hearing that stress does change the way you metabolize and utilize your meds, and that it is very common that people will need a little more medication during periods of stress, and when that period of stress is over, you go back to your old dose. This isn't progression, it's just your body coping.
That's really important. And speaking of ways to cope and ways to manage, let's get into the meat of it, because stress is all around us and it's different for everyone, and there are different ways to manage it. For some people, it's exercise. For other people, it's journaling, maybe meditating. Mm-hmm. But being mindful is something that we hear about a lot. And in that Fox Insight survey I just mentioned, where people with Parkinson's said they experienced more stress and more symptoms because of their stress, almost 40% of people said they practice mindfulness to manage stress. But Natalie, we hear a lot about it, but oftentimes we don't really know what mindfulness is. So can you tell us a little bit more about some of the definitions for mindfulness and how we can bring mindfulness into our daily lives?
Absolutely. And, I just need to say from the outstart that, I teach emotional health skills and mindfulness, but I used to be a skeptic of all of this for most of my life because it just was very abstract. And so mindfulness, the way that I think about it, is rooted in awareness, right? We can all relate to the example that I often use of, like, you have your morning coffee, you fill it up, you sit down, and then the next time you look down, the cup is empty. You had your coffee, but you don't remember having the coffee because it's just automatic. And so much of our lives, we actually spend in a mindless state. And some of that is incredibly helpful because we need to do some things on automatic. But the challenge comes around the fact that if we are not mindful, if we are not practicing awareness of how we feel, that it actually can lead to us accumulating stress and accumulating anxiety. And so the way that I very simply think about mindfulness is just noticing. It's noticing how you feel. It's pausing several times a day to actually check in with yourself, which not many of us do naturally, to just say, how am I feeling? And there are a couple very simple but really important and rooted in research practices that I just want to share about, well, how do we actually practice it and how do we use those practices to boost our well-being? And the first is around acceptance. Acceptance doesn't mean that whatever happens, happens, that we're throwing up our hands in the air. Acceptance is really the skill of learning to see how things are and how we feel with clarity instead of judgment, instead of any kind of harshness. I shouldn't feel this way, or this shouldn't be happening. The should is the judgment. And that's where so much of our struggle comes from, stress comes from, is if we get stuck there. And so by practicing acceptance and using that first step to just say, well, how am I feeling? And for so many of us, it's really challenging to feel the difficult feelings. It's hard to feel fear or loss or sadness. I'm not suggesting these are fun feelings, but research shows that when you allow yourself to feel a difficult feeling without trying to distract yourself, without immediately trying to, you know, push it down and not feel it, when you allow yourself to feel it without judgment, with just clarity, you actually get through it in a shorter amount of time and with less intensity. And that is because you're not wasting your emotional energy fighting with your feelings. And so that's a really powerful practice, the first step of acceptance. And then the second step is,
interrupt you for 1 second there, and Dan, I'll just bring you in for a moment, because I think acceptance is something that people with Parkinson's are probably really accustomed to. And we talk about this a lot with the diagnosis, which is really, really tough and hard to acknowledge and accept. And there's a big moment around accepting what that means and what that looks like for the future and the uncertainty of the future. And so I think there's been a lot of that we've discussed in this moment that we're all living in now, of accepting the uncertainty and the fear and the anxiety of where we all are. And so it's sort of bringing that into this moment, I think, is really powerful.
I agree. I mean, I think that one of the things that one of the hardest parts about the diagnosis is the acceptance, and it's not just an acceptance at a particular point in time. It's an ongoing acceptance, because symptoms change, your health status change, and there's a progression, and it's sort of an ongoing process of continual acceptance and continual acceptance of differences and changes. And I think that being able to do that and cope with that hopefully can help make this community, the PD community, more resilient to some of the outside stressors, and being mindful and being aware of the fact that you're constantly changing, your acceptance of yourself and your disease is constantly changing, will hopefully make it easier for us to think about accepting the outside world and being accepting of the uncertainty of the outside world. And I think the mindfulness ideas are terrific. I mean, I try and for me that involves going for a walk in our local park, at socially acceptable distances, of course, every day, and just being around the springtime flowers and the trees and just enjoying being in nature, or getting on the phone with friends and chatting for a few minutes, not about anything earth shattering or important, but just what's happening day to day, just sort of being in the moment, present, and being with other people, present in the moment, or by myself, present in the moment, is incredibly powerful.
But I think actually, yeah, Dan, you bring up such a great point around, going for a walk or chatting with friends, because the other part of acceptance that I think is really important is once you truly become aware of how you feel, how things are, to ask yourself, what is something that I can do to help me feel a little better, right? That may involve reaching out to a friend, right? Like, I love that you're talking about chatting with friends, or going for a walk, or looking at nature, whatever that is. It doesn't have to be earth shattering, but taking that one step to say, okay, what is something small that I can do to serve myself, to serve this moment, to honor myself, is actually really powerful. And I love the example that you shared. And when you talked about, enjoying nature, enjoying what you're seeing, that's the practice of gratitude. There's so much research that shows that when we practice gratitude, which is very simply just zooming in on things in our lives that are good, that are beautiful or kind or connected or loving, especially during a challenge, gratitude becomes a really powerful source of resilience, because all of our brains are much more sensitive to what's wrong naturally. It's part of the way that our brain helps us survive. It's very sensitive to negative stimuli, because usually danger comes with negative stimuli. What happens when we're in a challenging situation, which is where we all are right now, is that negativity bias gets even more sensitive. So the brain is looking at all of this uncertainty we're going through and saying, I think I see danger. And so your negativity bias gets even more sensitive. So it's easier to feel down. It's easier for to read one news article and to feel really, really down. And practicing gratitude is the best antidote, because when amidst the challenge, you ask yourself, okay, things are challenging, what is something that I am grateful for? And you answer that question. And the more specific you can be with your gratitude, the better. that tells your brain that the challenge, the stress, it's not everything, that there is more in your life that is good. And that is an incredibly powerful source of resilience that actually helps the brain not descend into a negativity spiral. And so I love, Dan, when you were talking, like, just the tone of your voice, going for a walk and enjoying nature, you're practicing gratitude. And so the more that you can be intentional about that during this challenging time, not only do you give yourself these moments of feeling a little uplifted, but you're helping yourself be more resilient because you're kind of dampening that negativity bias that our brain naturally has.
It's interesting. For me, it's also doing it without pressure. I think there's mm-hmm. you know, in the sort of, you know, COVID environment, and there's so much outside pressure to, you know, learn Mandarin or, you know, learn how to do some new, you know, exotic cooking, or you know, use the time for something, yeah, you know earth shattering and different and transform yourself. And for me, at least, I just, you know, trying to get through, you know, day by day and, you know, hour by hour. And I think, you know, the simple things are often the most satisfying and easiest things. They're not daunting. They're not hard to start. Just, you know, put one foot in front of the other and go for a walk. Just enjoy being outside. Do things that, you know, I don't feel like I have to, you know, everything has to have, you know, a deep, intense meaning, but just has to just bring some gratitude, enjoyment, and you know, present experience, and that's enough for a day.
I love the way you said that, Dan, and I love that you are bringing up the point about not feeling pressure to do some huge new thing, because that's really a part of self-care, is to just recognize that we're all going through something incredibly challenging. That, you know, people have been calling this the new normal. There's nothing normal with what we're going through. It's so hard. And to not expect some impossible new things from ourselves, but as you say, to just focus on practicing that awareness of how we feel and asking ourselves, what is something simple that I can do? Like the examples you've given. I love that.
Good. I was just going to add, I really love this idea of your internal compass, like checking in with yourself and not making comparisons to the external world. I remember my very first yoga class as a 19-year-old, I remember the yoga teacher saying, if you're looking at the person next to you, you're doing it wrong.
I'm laughing because I went to my first yoga class after I was diagnosed with PD, and I was astounded that people can move their bodies in any positions, let alone the positions they were moving them into.
Yeah. And speaking of yoga and meditation, these are ways to be mindful, but there are so many others. Can you tell us a little bit more about the different ways to practice mindfulness? And we're also getting a question, if you can maybe start, and then Natalie, you can add in. What's the difference between mindfulness and meditation?
So we ask, I'm doing this big, huge survey of people with Parkinson's disease, and we're asking questions about people who feel a lot of stress and people who practice stress management. And we can see that people who have a lot of stress are progressing faster, and people who practice stress management are progressing slower, but we don't know what that means. I will say that meditation is a very active process. You are working. So there is an autonomic nervous system that controls kind of the fight or flight or rest and digest part of the body. And over the course of a minute, the body is constantly oscillating between these two sides of the teeter-totter. And in Parkinson's disease, that's a little out of shape. That doesn't work so well. People tend to get stuck in fight or flight. It's like it's like having your foot on the gas pedal and it's hard to let up. And so meditation is very active, like exercise for the rest and digest part of the nervous system. You actually work focused on doing nothing. If your brain starts to stray, you consciously acknowledge it, you don't judge it, and you bring your attention back to your breath. And so it's different than just relaxing, taking a stroll, unwinding. It's actually like exercise for the calming part of your nervous system. There's to do that.
So, yeah, and I think this is so important to point out here because, you know, Lori, when we were talking about having this call, you said, I don't know if I'm the person to talk about meditation because I can't meditate. And I think people try to force themselves to meditate. And for a lot of people, it's a great thing, but it's not for everyone. And it's important to try out, number one, different meditation practices. So there are so many different types of meditation. They're not all just sitting there and holding a mantra or trying to focus on your breath. there are different visualization practices or being kind to yourself or thinking about being compassionate. So there's a many different variety of practices for meditation, number one. But if meditation isn't for you, that's okay too. It's just important to try different things and make sure that you're doing something that works for you as far as mindfulness is concerned.
And I just want to add something, Rachel, that I find so helpful. So Dr. Ellen Langer, she's a professor at Harvard. She's really considered kind of the mother of mindfulness. And her definition of mindfulness really stuck with me because I'm one of those people who spent most of my life thinking, oh, I could never meditate because that's just sitting cross-legged in a dark room for half an hour. No way. Like, my thoughts are all over. Her definition of mindfulness is noticing new things about the familiar things. And that's been really helpful for me, so I wanted to share. So even if you just, you know, go for a walk, like Dan, you were talking about going for a walk. I take a daily walk. One of the things you can do is go for a walk and give yourself a little challenge. I'm going to notice 5 new things on my walk. They can be, you know, I see a new bird or a new flower, or a new person, whatever that is. But in that act of noticing, what that does is it brings us to the present moment. And that is really the goal of meditation and the goal of mindfulness, is to not run away with wherever our thoughts are going, which is usually in the past or the future, but to be in the present moment. And so I just, what Dr. Ellen Langer, the way she's talked about it, has been really helpful for me. I don't sit and meditate in a dark room. I do go for a daily walk. And when I do practice noticing or even noticing things, she talks about, like, when your loved one, you know, enters the room for the first time, can you notice a couple of new things about them? It can be really small. Mindfulness just helps us to be in the present moment.
Yeah, I think that's really helpful. And just, you know, being aware of your body and how you're breathing, or how you're, you know, if your palms are sweaty or your heart is racing, or those sorts of things. I think, you know, or looking around yourself, exactly like you're saying, that's mindfulness. It doesn't have to be a real intense exercise. I will mention, too, in the resource list, there are a couple of free online guided meditation practices that are available. But again, there are many. Ask your friends, ask other people in the Parkinson's community what works, what doesn't work, and just try a few different ones out to see what works for you. And so on that note, I'd like to move on and talk a little bit more about some of the things we started talking about a little bit earlier, some of the ways that you can think about to ease mood changes like anxiety, depression, and feelings of loneliness and isolation that can be particularly amplified during this time. Now, we talked about mindfulness, which is one good way, and meditation, yoga, and those sorts of things. But again, stress comes in many different ways, and it brings out many different feelings. So I'd like to talk about a couple of the different things on this slide. And Dan, you found a couple ways to do a lot of these things despite the restrictions that are in place right now. We know that maintaining and building connections are so important, and keeping active is really important for Parkinson's, for mood, for general well-being. And those are two that you really found creative ways to stay in touch with. So can you tell us in particular about your community and about your exercise?
Sure. One of the things that I found incredibly helpful is I have a small group of friends, one person with Parkinson's and a couple people without Parkinson's. And we get together a couple times a week on a Zoom call and just catch up and chat and talk. And we actually end each call with a short meditation. And it's really, and I think, back into the meditation, we're just quiet with each other, just sort of be with each other, together in the same space, virtual space, I guess. Beyond that, talking to friends, making time and making the deliberate, intentional effort and taking the energy to make the phone call, to reach out to someone to see how they're doing, and to not just being a recipient of care, but to being somebody who reaches out and tries to engage with other people has really been a powerful way for me at least, to navigate some of the social isolation that comes from just being in your house all the time.
And I like that you said you actually went from once a week to three times a week.
Yeah.
You knew that community and connection is so important during this time.
Yeah. So with this particular group of friends, like, you know, we had gotten together once a week basically for, you know, for coffee in person. And then, you know, about a month and a half ago, we decided to get together virtually when social distancing became a new word in our vocabulary, and we've since moved to Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. And the conversations are not always earth shattering or life changing, but it's just good to be with friends and in the same space and be together. And sometimes it's a half an hour, sometimes it's an hour, and we just catch up. So it's a wonderful way to keep in touch with people and to stay social. And I think that one of the challenges with PD is that it tends to make your world smaller in many respects. It's hard to move around. It's hard to get around. It's hard to be understood. So the circle's kind of closed in, and reaching out and making yourself get out to the world and being part of the community really is helpful in so many ways.
And staying active too, again, so important, but different in this time. A lot of people with Parkinson's find that their group exercise program is their social support and their way to keep them motivated. How have you found creative ways or new ways to stay active during this time, Dan?
So I work out at home a little bit, but frankly, I find that kind of boring. So I've tried to be outside more and really push myself when I go for my walks and you know, make them longer and longer and really try and stretch more and be out active and outside more. But also in some online classes, and that's you know, it's different. I am kind of person. I like being in a room with other people when I work out. And sort of the Zoom workout or the workout with somebody in the screen across from you who knows you is the next best thing. And it's worth trying. And I've actually kind of met a couple other people through that process that I hope after this is all behind us in one way, shape, or form, I'll get to meet in person. Yeah, I guess not in person, live.
It's so great to hear how people are being creative and being innovative and keeping up their activity around this time. One of the other ways, you know, Dan, you talked about this with keeping your connections and sort of the check-ins that you've been doing that have helped you but are also helping others. And Natalie, you talked about how helping others is a way to boost your mood but also be kinder to yourself. So I'd like you to expound on that a little bit.
Well, absolutely. I mean, one of the things about kindness is that the fastest way to feel a little bit better is to do something kind for another person. I think we all know that kindness feels really good, but particularly when we are stressed, doing something caring and kind for someone else, it does two things. First of all, it just makes us feel uplifted. Anytime you do something kind, your brain releases serotonin, which we know makes us feel good. But more importantly, especially given the isolation many of us are feeling right now, when you do something kind, it helps you feel less alone. It helps you feel that you belong, that you have people in your life you care about, and that is incredibly powerful. That's something we need as human beings. And one of the things that I have found in just talking to folks during this time is how much, and Dan, you mentioned this, how much simple things really matter. So you may not think that, you know, checking in on a friend or texting a colleague to just say, how are you? How are you hanging in there? You may not think it's anything of a big deal and meaningful, but it's huge because what that tells the other person is someone is thinking about them. They feel less alone. And so I really encourage you to become intentional about your kindness practice. And the simplest way to do that is to check in with other people. And checking in is one of those things, it's simple to do, but it actually has two components. The first is just to let the person know you'd like to know how they're doing. And the second is to listen to what they have to say without, you know, if they're worried about something or sad, which many people are right now, without trying to fix it or make any suggestions, to just be there for them. And I think that's one of the biggest kindness gifts we can give to each other. I just want to share, someone shared with me, something she's been doing that I found such a great idea. I've started doing it. And she said she looks at her phone contacts once a day and she picks one or two people and she reaches out to them. And the woman who's doing this told me she's just connected with some people she hasn't talked to in 10 years and rekindled some old friendships. And I think we all have an opportunity right now to reach out more, to check in with people more. And by doing that, to actually make ourselves feel more connected, which helps us get through this really challenging time.
I love these tangible and actionable practices that you're giving us that are so easy. This takes less than 5 minutes to do, right? So it's something mm-hmm. simple mm-hmm. that helps others and makes you feel good. So I love these.
If you're enjoying this podcast, share it with a friend or rate and review it on iTunes. It helps listeners like you find and support our mission. MichaelJFox.org. Thanks for listening. Now, back to the podcast.
Lori, I want to bring you back in with the little box there that says keep up care, because that's looked different in this time, but it is so important, especially not just for the regular kind of maintenance of care for Parkinson's, which we talked about with Dan, with making sure that you're staying on top of your medication schedule and those sorts of things. But seeing your doctor, you know, what does that look like? And how do you make sure that you're seeing your doctor for your Parkinson's care, or if your anxiety seems to be higher? What kind of tips can you give people there?
Yeah, this is uncharted territory, and this is new for a lot of people. Some people are jumping up and down about, you know, Medicare has changed their rules, and so now they can consult with doctors outside of their state via telemedicine and have access to new providers they didn't have access to a month ago. Other people are freaking out because it's hard to get their battery changed for DBS. I mean, this is really, everyone's being affected by this a little bit differently. I will say, surprisingly, the majority of my patients are actually finding it a little bit easier to connect, to be a little more aware of their diet, their schedules. It's easier to be conscious when there's less stimulus in your environment, there's less moving around. So I think most of my colleagues are all doing telemedicine these days. And I think, you know, when we started doing it at our clinic, my local patients kind of didn't like the idea. They wanted to come in. But now that we've started, they're saying, I'll never come in again. This is great. I can stay in my pajamas and save an hour of traffic and driving. This is fabulous. So I think with this change comes new opportunities. I think that we might evolve the way that we do medicine permanently moving forward because of some of these opportunities we're all having.
Absolutely. It's giving us new opportunities, new challenges with it, but a lot to look forward to for the future too. But making sure that during this time we're keeping those lines of communication open, even if it's through the telephone, your doctor is still available, but making sure that you're keeping in touch if things look different. I don't want to leave this slide without talking about the news, because it's everywhere all the time and it's stressful. So Natalie and Dan, I want to talk to both of you, but Natalie, I want to start with you, because you talked about how you realized that the news was really stressing you out and it was a bad start to your day.
Yeah, what I shared was, we live outside of Boston. Our daughter is 15, so we've been on lockdown for about 5 weeks and she hasn't had school. And earlier this week, I came into the kitchen. My husband was there in the morning and I grabbed my phone. He was sitting there on his phone. And then I realized that this is how we've been starting our morning, because now we don't have to hurry and get breakfast ready and get her to school. We've just been sitting there reading the news or social media for the first half hour of the day. And it was making me feel so heavy and so down to start the day. It was actually making it more difficult for me to get through the day. And so I readjusted and I recommitted to starting my mornings in a way that is fueling. You know, the way that we start our day has a huge impact on how the rest of the day goes. If you ever have a bad morning, like get up on the wrong side of the bed, the rest of the day is likely to be pretty crappy. And it's not because there's anything wrong with you. It's because of that negativity bias I talked about. Once you're already stressed or cranky, little things are more annoying and stressful. And so I recommitted to myself. And for the past few days, I've been starting my morning by reading a few pages of a book that is interesting or fueling in some way, or some days I've actually watched a TED Talk just on a topic completely unrelated to anything that we're going through. And what I found is I have more energy. I have a different mindset. And so I really encourage you to think about two things. One is just creating a little ritual to help you start your day in a fueling way. It does not have to be long, but just be intentional about it. You know, what are some things you can do in the morning to help you have a better day? You know, it may be
journaling for some people, a gratitude practice, a short walk, whatever that is. And then the second is to just be really mindful about news consumption. There's so much bad news right now, and I'm not sure reading 10 articles gives you any more value or knowledge than reading one. And so I just suggest that maybe you limit. I know some folks have done things like they only check news once a day, or they only check their local news, or whatever that is. But just to treat your news consumption as something on your to-do list. So it's not something you're doing mindlessly all day long. It's something that you say, okay, this is when I'm going to do it. Now I've done it. I've checked it off and I'm done.
It's not just news, I think, that can be a trigger. I think being mindful extends into being aware of other areas in our life where we find things and people and situations that trigger us, and mindfully avoiding those. I told a story when we were preparing for this call about a woman in town who started practicing biofeedback. And I wanted to learn a little bit more about what that was. And so I went to her office and she hooked me up to all these machines that measure heart rate and temperature and respiratory rate. And you can see all of your numbers on the screen in front of you. And I was showing off a little bit. She was saying, okay, lower your heart rate by, you know, 5 beats per minute, increase your blood pressure. Yeah. And I had, you know, 10 years into my yoga practice, I was pretty good at this. And I was kind of getting fancy, lowering my temperature while raising my heart rate. And then my phone rang and my wires got all crossed. The lines went all over the screen and I couldn't get control of my autonomic nervous system again. And it was just the ring of a phone that set me off. And so, you know, just being aware of that, I have kept my phone on vibrate for the last 15 years since I experienced that moment. I saw how my stress, the stress that is created by the ring of a phone for me. So absolutely. I think it's not just news, but life that happens, and how you moderate that.
Absolutely. And being so aware of what your stressors are. So Lori, we're getting a fair number of questions about new or worsening depression or anxiety. What can you tell people about what to do about that?
Well, there are a couple things ranging from simple to complex. You know, Dan spoke earlier, he said something about going for a walk and preferably in nature. And, you know, it sounds very hippie-esque, but there is this whole field of science emerging from Japan. I think it's called Shinrin Yoku or something like that, but it translates to forest bathing. And what we find is we can take people and have them stand in a parking lot for an hour or stand in the middle of a forest for an hour, and we can measure inflammation and stress hormones coming down by just standing in a forest. And you don't get that in parking lots. And so, you know, it's little things about choosing which environment to surround yourself in have measurable, meaningful impacts on your physiology. So it could be as simple as that. I think there are a ton of foods. There have been two large studies now that show that, you know, a Mediterranean diet is as effective as antidepressants for people dealing with chronic depression. I think the science is getting stronger and stronger that a lot of these things, lifestyle modification behaviors, can really translate to meaningful difference in one's quality of life, especially where mood disorders are concerned.
So it's different for different people. It could be, you know, going for walks in nature. It can be your diet. For some people, it is medication. Could also be talk therapy. Therapists are very much available virtually as well, doing a lot of telemedicine now, as you were mentioning. So I think, too, the key, just making sure that there's an open discussion with your doctor, too, and your loved ones about what's going on.
Oh, I was just going to say, I think that we all handle things like this differently. And we're talking about a lot of kind of things that are relaxing. But I actually find that learning Chinese, who mentioned that earlier, but there are things that I can do that give me a sense of control, that when I learn new skills, new tips, new tricks, when I acquire new information, it's empowering. It makes me feel like the world might be happening all around me, but there is stuff I can do right here today. And there's something for me about education and learning and knowledge that really gives me a sense of power. And that seems to help navigate stressful situations.
Yeah, focusing on what you can control versus what you can't, I think, is a big big message there. Maybe a good one for you, Dan. What advice might you offer to help motivate somebody with Parkinson's who was not really active or socially engaged before all this happened?
Well, you know, it's interesting you mentioned what you can do. I mean, there's lots of things you can do in your in the Parkinson's community and in your smaller town or city community and the national community to be involved in lots of different things. But in terms of, you know, making a difference in the Parkinson's community, feeling engaged and active and feeling like you're making a difference. And there's things you can do online studies. I mean, the Fox Trial Finder has lots of online studies that you can participate in. You can participate in those studies from your home, and really feel like, you know, you feel empowered and like you're doing something positive for the PD community. Beyond the PD community, you can volunteer to, like somebody I can't remember who was saying before, but reaching out and calling people and checking in. Just because you have Parkinson's doesn't mean you can't volunteer and do things for other people. And being of service to other people is one of the most rewarding things, and for me at least, and things that makes me feel best about myself. It doesn't have to be anything huge or earth shattering, but just, you know, checking with somebody else and seeing how they're doing and seeing if there's anything you can do for them to make their day better, can be an incredibly rewarding and powerful, powerfully positive experience. The other thing I wanted to mention is the news. That whole conversation reminded me that when I was first diagnosed, I obsessively watched the news or read the news on Parkinson's. It's probably 6 hours a day for days and days and days. Finally, my doctor actually had to tell me, Dan, you're medically prescribed to no more than 10 minutes of news twice a day. This is your medication. And I kind of followed that, kind of didn't, but it reminded me of what was happening to me as this the whole COVID thing started. I was just obsessively checking the news, and there's no change. Just like, you know, day to day in the Parkinson's news world, there's no change. It's changes slow. It takes time, and the news today is, you know, a lot of it. Remember, it's designed to suck you in, to make you worried, to increase anxiety, because that's what makes you watch more. That's what sells commercials. Understanding that and limiting self-limiting your intake is not going to limit the amount of information, but it will just limit the amount of anxiety you take from getting that information.
So important. Yeah, limiting and making sure that you're in control of when you access the information, how much, how long, those sorts of things, going to credible sources. I want to make sure that we spend some time talking about balance and how that balance might be imperfect right now. It's something that we're all constantly looking for, whether we talk about a work-life balance or an emotional balance. But in this time, we're working from different spaces. Care partners are often working longer hours. Parents are juggling being teachers to their kids while also working full-time. And it's gotten to be a lot for a lot of us. So, Natalie, I want to start with you here and ask you, how can we take a step back and slow down and move a little bit more toward an even keel?
You know, one of the things, I actually struggle with the word balance because I think it's really hard. And for me, if I like try to think of like balance, it implies this kind of grand notion. And then I just get really intimidated because my life doesn't feel that way. So one of the ways I encourage you to think about balance is kind of moment by moment or hour by hour. And it doesn't mean that every hour will be balanced. So there are hours in my day where I'm all work, 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 and I don't see my daughter, even though she's home from school. And then what I try to do is when I'm with her, I try to be really with her. And it really goes back to mindfulness, right? It's just being in the moment you're in. That's a huge source of feeling balanced for me. When we are multitasking, and by the way, it turns out none of us can multitask, we just switch tasks. So when we are multitasking or when we're trying to do a bunch of things all at the same time, that's incredibly stressful for the brain. And that actually, what helps me stop myself from doing it is it makes us less effective at any of the tasks we're doing. Each time we switch tasks like that, we're actually losing 25% of our effectiveness, which is what I remind myself when I'm tempted to like look at my email as I'm talking to my daughter. So that's my first suggestion, is to just think of how can you be fully present in the moment you're in? So if you have to work, can you like put away other distractions and work? If you're with your kids or a partner or a loved one, can you just be there? That's actually helps reduce stress quite a bit. And the other thing I want to highlight is it's incredibly important to take short breaks throughout the day, even a 10-minute break. So it can be something incredibly simple, just like having your favorite cup of tea or coffee and just not looking at your phone, not multitasking, or reading a few pages out of a book, like I mentioned I'm trying to do in the mornings, going out for a 10-minute walk. A 10-minute break during the day really helps the brain get into more of that equanimity balance space. There's a lot of research that shows that if you can get a 5 to 10-minute break outside during the day, it boosts your mood right away. It helps reduce stress. And it doesn't have to be sunny. People ask me if it has to be sunny. And I love, Lori, listening to you about talking about forest bathing. It's a growing field, but you don't have to be in a forest, just fresh air for 5 to 10 minutes. And so consider scheduling what I call a 10-minute self-care reset on your calendar. Mine is, just so you know, it's at 4 p.m. every day because my energy wanes in the afternoon. It's common for many of us, but find a time in your day and just put it yourself a reminder to just self-care reset. And again, it can be something as simple as a 10-minute break, but when you take that brain, you help your brain essentially catch up to where you are, to process a little bit, to catch up to your own thoughts. And it can be, it seems like not a big deal. And so many people I've shared this with, like a 10-minute break, how could it make a big difference? It really makes a really meaningful difference.
I love how you talk about this literal break in the middle of our day or whenever we need it. But you also talked about, in essence, a bigger break during this time that we don't have to expect that because it seems like maybe we have more unplanned time. We have to clean out our entire basement or whatever. We can really give ourselves a break. Can you talk more about that?
Yes, and that's really the practice of self-compassion, right? What is self-compassion? Self-compassion is treating ourselves as we would a friend, right? And I've used this example before. You know, if in the middle of this worldwide pandemic, a friend says to you, "Oh my God, I can't believe I haven't yet cleaned out all our closets," or, you know, "We're in a worldwide pandemic, but I cannot believe I've not started learning a new language. Like, what's wrong with me?" What would you say to that friend, right? I don't think any of us would say, "Oh my God, you're such a slacker. You know, how dare you?" Like, we would say something really kind. We would say like, "Well, of course you haven't cleaned out your closets. We're amidst a worldwide pandemic. You're juggling so much. You have kids at home," whatever that is. And so I really encourage you to treat yourself with the same compassion and give yourself a break in expectations. You know, our expectations of what we should be doing, what we should be accomplishing, what we should be getting done, need an adjustment right now. We need to, again, recognize all the things we've talked about, right? How much stress we're all experiencing right now. Stress takes energy. Stress takes the energy of your brain. And so we literally have less cognitive capacity right now for new things. And so it's this consistent practice of being compassionate towards ourselves in our expectations. And I'll share something that we do these webinars for our community, and I shared this yesterday and it really resonated. So I want to share it here. You know how when you have Chinese fortune cookies and, you know, you take out the fortune and you read it and it's like a funny college thing. You're like, you add "in bed" at the end just to make it funny. So when your mind goes to like, "Oh my God, I didn't get this thing done," I want you to add "amidst a worldwide pandemic." Okay. Like, "Oh, I should really be learning a new language amidst a worldwide pandemic," or how come I didn't clean out my closets amidst a worldwide pandemic, to just like, it's really been working for me when I get into that, like, overachiever, like, "Oh, all these things I'm not getting done." It really helps me just like laugh at myself a little bit and say like, this isn't normal. And so I just encourage you to treat yourself as you would a friend. And when you find yourself in the should space, "I should be doing this, I should be doing this," maybe you can pause and very simply just consider, especially if you're kind of being harsh in that tone of voice towards yourself, can you pause and can you imagine that you're talking to a friend that you love or a loved one or someone you really care about? What would you say to them? And I think in that moment, I hope for you, there's that awareness of just being kind towards your own expectations right now.
Is there anything you can add in acknowledging how tough this can be with self-care during this time when care partners might be taxed a little bit more, as far as, you know, more self-compassion can be added to the mix right now, or more mindfulness? What would you say to care partners right now?
I'll say, you know, my mantra is kind of B plus is good enough. You know, I don't think any of us need to strive to get an A in our life situation. I think good enough, especially right now, is plenty. And I'll second the compassion thing. I'll second the gratitude thing. I think that it really, for me, comes down to mindset and a perspective shift. You know, we can't change what's happening to us, but we can change how we respond to it. A couple years ago, I said to somebody that I felt like I was swimming. I was in the ocean and these huge waves just kept coming and pummeling me over and over. And I remember my friend saying, sounds like it's time to find a surfboard and learn to surf. Right. And that was such a good analogy for me to realize that the waves are going to keep coming. The stress of this life, this situation is still here, but we can change how we handle what's coming at us.
It's all about perspective, isn't it? I want to take us through our last slide and then to some more questions. So just want to make everyone aware about ways that you can stay connected to our community through all this. So certainly through these types of educational opportunities, we'll have more coming your way. One on telemedicine, which we talked about in the near future, but also more Facebook Live watch parties, ways for you to tell us that you're staying active, how you're staying active. And as Dan mentioned, you can also participate in online research from your home. So Fox Insight is our online observational study where we're learning more about the lived experience of Parkinson's, and there will be more studies coming your way there soon. So to get to more questions, which have been coming throughout the hour, Lori, I'll go back to you. We're getting some questions specifically around symptoms. We talked a little bit at the beginning of the hour about stress. So tell us a little bit more about how symptoms can worsen with stress. And is that permanent? Is it temporary? Does it indicate that the disease is worsening? How do you manage it?
Yeah, so without getting into med management stuff, I will say the tremor is almost helpful for some people because you have this external barometer that tells you when you're getting stressed and not. Some people will identify their stress going up because their tremor is telling them so. And so I think for people who don't have a tremor, it's actually a little harder to be self-aware of when your body is responding to stress. I think that the easiest kind of way to identify if any one of us is under stress is you can just kind of sit quietly and put one hand on your upper chest and one hand down by your belly. And if your rest and digest part of your nervous system is dominant, your belly will expand with each breath. If you're in a higher stress state, what will happen is that top part of your chest will go up and down. And so you can kind of see if it's your top or your bottom hand that's moving, and that will kind of tell you where your nervous system is at. The patient certainly experiences, you know, worse motor symptoms, worse tremor, and it's very temporary. It is very temporary. I have a lot of patients who say, you know, I take one pill 4 times a day. That's great. That works for me, except if I'm traveling. When I'm at an airport going through security, I need an extra half tab because the stress of getting my shoes off, getting my stuff on the bin, and it's not just motor, it's all the background noise, the stimulation. Other people take an extra half tab before they go play pickleball with a friend. And so it doesn't matter if it's good stress, bad stress. I think many people with Parkinson's have come to understand that when there's a lot of commotion or demands being placed on them, their need for dopamine is greater. The analogy I'll use is it's like driving a car, you know, at 100 miles an hour, you get worse gas mileage than if you're going 25 miles an hour on a country road. And so this stressful thing that we're all experiencing right now is high performance. You are asking more of your body and your nervous system. It is only natural that you're going to burn through your dopamine faster. So no, it's not progression. It's just you're asking more of your body, and it's not unreasonable to talk to your doc first, but say, can I up my meds a little bit in the afternoon? I'm finding my symptoms are worse when X, Y, and Z happens. For a lot of people, that's very, very helpful. And as soon as they get a grip on the situation or the stressor passes, they go back to their old dose. This is not progression. It's temporary.
That's really, really helpful clarification. Thank you so much. Dan, a question for you. A lot of people are experiencing being more tired than usual, sleeping more, sleeping less. Is there anything that you do to help your sleep?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing that I should do that I'm not always as good as I could be about it is putting the devices away, putting them in a different room, and not having the temptation to you know, wake up at night and immediately check my email or you know, check the news or do all the things that I've spent the last half an hour telling myself I shouldn't be doing. it's really more of a challenge than it should be. I mean, I actually, we had to create a separate drawer in our kitchen where our whole family will literally put our devices in the drawer at night and close the drawer. And like, sometimes I think we should have a lock on it because it's really tempting. It's like a drug. You were all addicted to it and it takes more energy than I would like to do that. The other thing is trying to maintain a regular schedule. We have two teenage boys, and my wife is home, and the tendency is to sleep, stay up as late as we want and sleep in, the schedules are up, nobody's getting ready for work in the morning because we're all working from home or schooling from home. But we're trying more than we have been in the last couple of weeks to just get up when we usually get up and set a time when we get up and when we eat dinner and have lunch and maintain a regular schedule. Because, when we're not on a regular schedule, particularly with Parkinson's and all the medication adjustments and timing issues that are involved in that, things just are harder. And so maintaining that schedule has been really helpful as well.
One thing I'll add about sleep is I think there is a tendency in our culture to grab a bottle of wine or a glass of wine when you start to feel stressed. And I don't know that people realize that, alcohol will help you fall asleep faster, but it absolutely prevents you from getting into the deeper stages of sleep. And even a glass can really impact one's sleep. You're more likely to wake up in the night. You're less likely to wake rested. You're more likely to have temperature dysregulation through the course of the night. And so being aware of some of your tools and habits that you think might be serving you but could actually be hurting in the long run is just something to be aware of.
Good point. Natalie, if you're having trouble practicing mindfulness, what else can you try? This person says failing at it is its own kind of stress.
Oh, I hear you. Here's the thing. One of the best ways to practice mindfulness is to do something you really enjoy, because that's when we actually get to a place. Because really, again, mindfulness is just being where we are. And so I would ask you to think about what is something you really enjoy doing. A lot of people, really love gardening or cooking or writing or painting or whatever that is. Doing something like that is being mindful. And so for some of us, doing something instead of trying to sit and be present or even notice things might actually be more doable. So I encourage you to think of something that you really enjoy doing, and it doesn't matter what it is. And again, it's safe to do right now. But when you are doing something and you're just getting lost in it, and we all know that feeling. Like I have a friend who absolutely loves to sing. And when she sings, I think something could fall from the ceiling. She wouldn't notice because she's so in it. That's actually, you've probably heard of the state of flow, right? We're in that state of flow when time kind of moves away. We're not really concerned with our thoughts. So think of something you really enjoy doing and practice mindfulness by doing it. Something that I do is I love to paint. It's something that I do purely for joy. I've never taken a class. It's not something I do professionally. And so when I paint, that is one way that I practice mindfulness. It's very active. I'm doing a lot. But in that moment, I'm not thinking about my to-do list or something I should have done. I'm just painting. And so that's actually, I'm really glad for the question because I'm grateful for the opportunity to share that doing something where you are in that moment and really enjoying it is another way to practice mindfulness.
That's so great. I'd love if each of our panelists could leave our audience with one last statement or tip or piece of advice that you think would be helpful. So Dan, I'll start with you.
So I'm just thinking about the previous slide that said find your imperfect balance, which is, I thought was, be great for Parkinson's patients. Many of our balance is not perfect and physically, but I think being okay with everything being a little out of whack emotionally and in the world is okay too, and not to let that get to you, but to try and find that balance and do the best you can with it, and with understanding that the equilibrium will change, and that will be okay too.
That's great.
And Lori?
There is a Sanskrit quote that says, the best place to meditate is in the mouth of a lion. And I like that. I think it's so easy to come up with all of these excuses why, well, this is too restless, there's too much going on, I'm too busy, and we have all these external excuses for why we can't tune in and quiet ourselves. And that's exactly when you need to the most. And so I'll end by the quote, the best place to meditate is in the mouth of a lion.
Thank you so much. And Natalie?
And I would just remind you of something that my spiritual teacher shared with me when I was in a really difficult, dark place, and that is that you are a being and not a doing. And there is enough challenges right now without us putting pressure on ourselves to get more done, get this done. And so if you get caught in kind of that overwhelmed cycle, just remind yourself that you are a being and not a doing. And that also relates to, you know, helping others or connecting with others, your presence and your care is the biggest gift. And so that's what I would love to leave you with. It's just the reminder that you are a being and not a doing.
Thank you all so much for sharing your time and your expertise with us. And thank you for being part of our community and for joining us today. We'll be sending a link to the webinar on demand to listen again or to share as you'd like. And we really hope you found it helpful. Please mark your calendar for our next webinar, which is on May 21st, where we'll be talking about practical tips and personal viewpoints on being newly diagnosed with Parkinson's. Stay home, stay safe, and stay connected.
Thanks for listening. Community members like you are bringing us closer than ever to a world without Parkinson's disease. Learn how you can support the Michael J. Fox Foundation in its mission at michaeljfox.org.
This is Michael J. Fox. Thanks for listening to this podcast. Learn more about the Michael J. Fox Foundation's work and how you can help speed a cure at michaeljfox.org.